from WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina. It's the fifth edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. A dozen or so people, diverse in age, ethnicity, and political leanings, have agreed to be part of a year-long experiment in civil discourse. Each month, we bring you a conversation with members of the group. Our aim? To observe whether the tone and quality of the conversation changes as they get to know one another over the course of the year. With us today, Carl, retired from the military and New Hanover County Public Schools. Joe, a hypnotherapist in Brunswick County, and Catherine's husband. Catherine, a nurse and Joe's wife. Lee, an actor, director, and writer. And Lydia, artist and mom to a toddler. Welcome, BTSers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
And it's completely fine to speak up and say hello.
Hello.
Hi, Rachel.
Just a reminder that today's show is pre-recorded. If you'd like to share your own observations, feel free to send us an email at coastline@whqr.org, and we might use your comment or question on a future episode. Today, we are going to tackle what is probably one of the most passionately debated issues in modern-day American politics, abortion rights advocacy versus abortion rights opposition. Yep. Just dropped some TNT onto the table. Our participants have been practicing for 4 months now. This is round five. NPR reported on a recent law passed by the state of Georgia. The so-called fetal heartbeat bill bans abortions in the state as soon as heartbeat activity is detectable. That's typically about 6 weeks into a pregnancy, before many women know they're pregnant, according to NPR. An Alabama law signed by Governor Kay Ivey earlier this month is stricter. It makes performing any abortion a crime unless a woman's life is threatened or there is a lethal fetal anomaly. The restrictive state laws are raising the likelihood that the U.S. Supreme Court will reconsider the right to abortion. The landmark case establishing that right, Roe versus Wade, came before the Supreme Court in 1973. But before we get to our group members' positions, let's explore the reason behind this discussion. One of our participants told us that after mentioning the topic to several friends, they told her she might want to opt out. She says she's not hearing that this is a valuable or an appropriate topic for the group. Now, I raise this because there are probably a lot of people thinking the same thing. It's TNT for a diverse group, right? So let's go back to how you feel about the appropriateness of the topic and whether there was any trepidation on your part showing up today. Lee.
I don't really have any trepidation about the topic. In fact, for me, I have never quite understood. What I don't understand is why there's so much antipathy here. No one likes abortion. I'm just going to say that right from the beginning, that I believe that no one likes it. There are no abortion spas anywhere. People don't do this for pleasure. It's always a difficult and desperately emotional decision when it does happen. And we've had 46 years. And what we've done in those 46 years since the decision is we've pulled into armed camps and started throwing things at one another when we could have been taking the time to find ways to make abortion rare and unnecessary.
And I want to pick up on that point a little bit later.
But for me, that's where I am right now.
Yeah. And Lydia, Was this threatening for you in any way?
I would say yes. I feel like, you know, abortion rights, you know, people tend to be very judgmental one way or the other about anyone's views about it. I think, however, just going back to what you had mentioned, I think it's a very important and valuable discussion to have because laws are being passed all over the country restricting people's rights to become mothers or not to become mothers and whether or not they have a choice. And so I think it's very, very valuable, but I will admit because of the way that it exposes, you know, such personal feelings about motherhood, religiosity, it's very personal, and people are very, very judgmental about it. So I would say I have trepidation, but I'm glad to be here, and I think it's important.
You've also said, Lydia, that you think as a woman it's harder to have an opinion on it because you're going to be wrong, whichever way you come at it.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's, for men, I think it's much more theoretical. I mean, women have to suffer the consequences of, pregnancy. Men do not. The burden of motherhood is, childcare falls much, much more heavily on women. So it's really, I think it's much, much more personal for women.
Catherine, do you agree with Lydia on that point? Is this difficult to talk about as a woman? You're also coming at this from a unique place because you're a nurse.
I was going to say, as a healthcare provider, it puts me in a different light, too. But getting back to your original question, I think it's very important for us. We're here and supposedly in an experiment in civil discourse and knowing that we're all going to have different opinions. And that's what this group is about, to be able to express our opinions in a very non-threatening way, as might occur outside of this room. But I think that we're here wanting to listen to other people's opinions, and we're all going to have them. But that's what this group is supposed to be about, from what I understood. So it is important to bring up these issues. And I'm sure as we go through the rest of the year, there's going to be some other very hot issues. But we're hoping to be able to listen and understand and appreciate that everyone is going to have a different opinion.
And so going back to the goal of this, Carl, what do you hope to get out of this? What would you gain if you're able to go through this year-long experiment and get to a point where you can talk about something as controversial and deeply emotional as whether there should be abortion rights or whether those rights as they exist now should be taken away?
I think my greatest achievement would be to become a better listener, to actually hear what people say and not just look at them and pretend that I see their words. It's just to actually listen to them and understand how they seriously feel about it. That would be my hope, that I'd be a better listener.
Catherine.
I think it's important, too, that as we see so much emotion around this issue outside, that I'm a problem solver, and the first step of problem solving is gathering the facts. And I think I have a stack of papers in front of me because I have looked into what's going on, and I don't think we'll do away with Roe v. Wade. I mean, that's been around for years. We fought before, we fought afterwards, and it's going to be here my lifetime. But to me, the bigger issues are around the infanticide, if you will, the New York law that allows you to kill babies. And that's the way I feel about it, having been there and seen it. Not really seen it happen, thank goodness. But to look at it from what are we doing here in North Carolina? Because we have the bill right now for the Born Alive bill, and I think that needs to be discussed right here.
And we will get to that. I know that there are people who would disagree with your interpretation of that New York state law. But Joe, tell us, what is the value of listening? What is the value of you listening to someone who disagrees with you on such a fundamental point, such an important part of the political discussion?
I think the challenge with anyone out there is to learn to respect other people. I know sitting around the table, there's a lot of divergent views, but I think as we get to know each other, we have developed a mutual respect from where we're coming from. And that's a challenge with the general public. And culturally, with media, the way it's going and everybody is rabble-rousing on different sides of the issue, and we're forgetting that people are people. mutual respect is, I can respect Carl in everything he does as an individual and as a person, but I know I probably disagree with him on certain issues. That doesn't make him a lesser person or me a lesser person.
What is the advantage to you of interacting with Carl if you disagree with him on fundamental issues?
You know, to learn somebody else's different divergent viewpoint, to know where someone different than you are is coming from, and to learn how to value the other people's opinion. And that's what the challenge is in this abortion issue. We're talking, it's become a political issue, it is a religious issue, and there's all kinds of variants in between in terms of what it means in long-term birth. It's crazy. And what people are forgetting, which I've had experience in my practices, is working with women who have had abortions and the emotional fallout, if you will, years and years after that. I think people don't realize that. And it was interesting dealing with these women in a therapeutic situation. So it's crazy.
You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. We have Carl, Joe, Catherine, Lee, and Lydia with us today. We'll be back after a short break continuing this discussion. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Beneath the Surface. Listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. It's the fifth edition of our year-long experiment in civil discourse. Lydia, Lee, Carl, Joe, and Catherine are with us today. While this is a pre-recorded discussion, we welcome listener observations. You can send comments, which we might use for discussion on another show, to coastline@whqr.org. You can also post on WHQR's Facebook page or Instagram. Joe, in the break, you posed a key question. Why don't you ask that question for us again?
The question is, why do people think that this is going to be a fireworks topic, that folks can't discuss it rationally with mutual respect for each other?
Good question. Lydia?
I just repeating some of the language I've already heard. I mean, when you use the word infanticide, it recalls, you know, words like homicide and murder, and it's not a situation where anyone can win. I just, you know, it's not a situation where anybody can ever be right, anybody can ever win. If you believe that women should have the right to choose, then it's very, very easy for someone on the opposing side to say, well, then you believe in killing babies or taking, you know, life away from unborn children. And then, you know, it's just as easy to fire back and say, well, do you think it's okay for, you know, a 14-year-old raped in Alabama? Like, so they have to carry a pregnancy to term, even though that sexual act was forced upon them? Like, how is it a situation where anybody can ever be right? When, you know, especially for women, I think it's much more difficult for women than for men, because, you know, you're never going to have to make that choice.
Catherine,
whereas women have to suffer the consequences.
When I said infanticide, I am talking about babies born alive, not necessarily the early stages of abortion, but babies born alive. And if I may, I'd like to read to you the definition of born alive from the North Carolina Born Alive Bill. This bill has passed both the House and the Senate, vetoed by our governor, and approved again by the Senate and waiting for a vote to override in the House. But born alive is defined as With respect to a member of species Homo sapiens, this term means the complete expulsion or extraction from his or her mother of that member and at any stage of development who, after expulsion and extraction, breathes or has a beating heart, pulsation of the umbilical cord, or definite movement of voluntary muscles, regardless of whether the umbilical cord has been cut, and regardless of whether the expulsion or extraction occurs as a result of natural or induced labor, cesarean section, or induced abortion. Goes on further to say, any infant born alive after an abortion or within a hospital, clinic, or other facility has the same claim to protection of the law that would arise from any newborn, or for any person who comes to a hospital, clinic, or other facility for screening and treatment, or otherwise becomes a patient within the care. As so a healthcare provider.
I have to say, though, I heard a fact check with the Raleigh News and Observer talking with WUNC about whether this is something that frequently happens.
No, it doesn't happen very frequently at all.
Right. And so the whole idea that somebody would murder a baby that's come out of the womb and is viable is sort of the implication in this PolitiFact check was that it was kind of a red herring.
Well, the Virginia governor explained as a physician what happened. If it happens once, it's enough. If we have a toddler who falls into a pool and you're standing there in a shallow pool and the mother says, leave it to die, I don't want it, would you even think twice about trying to save that toddler?
And I think that the implication here in the fact-checking is that medical professionals would always save the baby because the baby has the same rights without that legislation
but
as any human being.
But they do not. And that's what the Virginia governor said. They let these babies lay on a table and die. They do not. If the mother decides, and that's what they're saying, the mother now decides. The mother has a right to decide about her own body. But a baby that's born alive is no longer in the body of the mother. So the mother, does that mother have a right to decide to kill her child?
And
in any other circumstance,
and
she does.
And I don't want to get too much into the weeds here because this is really about how we arrived at these positions and, mm-hmm. and really understanding people. And I would be very surprised if there was a person sitting at this table that would let a viable, that would let a baby die they had any control over it.
But our governor would.
That was going to be my question. Well, even my question is this. How does that become abortion? How does that reach?
That's what I said. It's
how
not.
How is that all the way over on this page?
And that's a great point, Carl.
You know, how is that? I mean, if you want to keep pulling a string and bringing in different things to define as an abortion, then okay, you can do that. You could go, I mean, I could really give you some serious conversations about this whole conversation, but I think that one of the biggest problems in having discussion is that it's always about a win and a lose. Somebody wants to win. I have to be right and you have to be wrong. And there's no in between. That's what's wrong with us. We can't talk to each other and come to a common ground. It's either all my way or all your way. And that's never going to work. And it's always going to end up in a battle, in a fight where, and I think a lot of our younger people now are seriously having troubles with being able to have these kinds of discussions without saying I'm right and you're right or you're wrong. If somebody has to be right and wrong, and somehow we have to get through this. I don't know.
Lee, you actually mentioned in the first segment that you've wondered why, since Roe v. Wade was ruled upon, there hasn't been a movement in this country towards making abortion more rare. What do you mean by that? In what way?
Well, it goes to what Carl just said about fighting. It seems to be more about the fight and rather than the problem. The problem, the fact is, no matter what is decided in the courts or in legislatures anywhere in this country, no one anywhere is going to get rid of abortion. It's a question of whether abortion will be safe or legal. We had abortions all through from frontier days through 1973, so-called back alley abortions, and that a lot of people died from having. And it is, you can, but why, and nobody likes the fact that there's, that an abortion has to happen. No one likes it. So why aren't we working together? Because there is common cause between people who oppose abortion and people who want women to have dominion over their own bodies. There is common cause there to make abortion unnecessary. I don't have an answer. If I had an answer, I'd be a genius. I'd send it out to the world. It would fix everything. I don't have that, but I do am just smart enough to know that people working together can often crack complicated, complex, and difficult problems.
Our Towns, a book written by James and Deborah Fallows, chronicles their experience traveling to towns and cities across America. In every town and city where these two find economic renewal, they also find people working together for common goals. And as one reviewer of this book put it, the towns, the people in the towns are rethinking the what's and the how's, but they're keeping the why's and they're taking pride in what's happening. In other words, bitter disagreements don't keep them apart. We've talked before about the national scene, Capitol Hill, how the loss of compromise is affecting the business of government. But can you see evidence here in the Cape Fear region, in your own life, in the loss of a relationship or the loss of cooperation on an issue, something that ideological differences seem to have impeded that you can actually point to? Joe?
Surprisingly, you singled me out first, but being very involved in the political process and being identified as such as the county chairman and the district vice chair and stuff and heavily involved in campaigns, people...
The Brunswick County Republican Party,
yes.
For people who are just joining us.
I'm sorry. But as we go through that, people know that I'm very active in that scene. And, you know, I've had a lot of people, a number of people who have essentially taken issue without even knowing who I am. However, I find that the way I look at it is I respect everyone in terms of where they're coming from, and I can, establish a relationship without worrying about their political side. And that happens a great deal. I have many, many friends on the other side of the aisle, and we have some interesting conversations and discussions. I avoid confrontation because there's no way I'm going to change anybody's opinion, and they're entitled to their opinion. And I find that if I look beyond that, I can get to know the person. And there are many fine people on the other side of the aisle who do tremendously good things in our communities. We just happen to have a different opinion in terms of how we see the political issues or the political waves going. And I think that's part of the challenge with this abortion issue. It is political in nature, and both sides are using it to their advantage. And the emotional issues, the need, the point in terms of trying to do away with it, and how come there's other alternatives, doesn't make a difference to the politician, and doesn't make a difference to whether it be on the R side or the D side. This is an issue which motivates their base, so they're going to use it. And that's part of the problem I see is keeping it alive, if you will, in the confrontational aspect of it. And until it does not become a political issue, we're going to have this type of dichotomy. And it's both sides.
You make a really interesting point about how politicians use it to, as you say, energize their bases. And this exercise here is really about citizens who don't have a political agenda coming together and learning to listen to each other and seeking to understand, reaching out to someone past their own position on an issue and really seeking to understand. And so we've seen a divergence here between Catherine, your discussion about the North Carolina Born Alive legislation, and Lee and Lydia. Is it fair for me to put you two into the similar camp on this in terms of?
Probably.
And I just want to respond by saying I think that statistics would bear out that abortions are at an all-time low in the past 2 years. So I
in
think
terms
that
of, in terms of rates, abortion
yes,
rates.
Yes, and I think that that's we can attribute that to increase in sex education and contraception. So I do think that there is a dialogue about there are ways we can reduce abortion, and that is important. But I sort of feel like the nuts and bolts of what we're trying to discuss here is not a red herring of the very, very few cases where there's a second trimester abortion after 24 weeks, where there's a small possibility that the fetus could exist outside the, uterus at like 24 weeks. It's in view of what's happened in Georgia, Alabama, Ohio, possibly Louisiana, possibly North Carolina, does a woman have the right to decide whether or not she's going to become a mother in the event of an unplanned pregnancy? Does she have that choice as an individual?
Catherine, if we set aside the Born Alive bill.
I was going to say, and there are extremes on this whole thing. I think, like this idea with New York coming with the Born Alive, if you want to call it that, versus the Alabama bill, do away with all abortion. Those are the extremes, and that's what causes a lot of dissension. There probably is a lot of, I respect a woman's right to choose on a, quote, normal early abortion. I mean, that's not up to me. I can't dictate to her. What my choice would be different. But when we talk about these extremes, and when we talk about, everybody just wants to get it to the Supreme Court to hear what's going to happen to Roe v. Wade, that's why the extremes are there. New York started it with this extreme, probably with an ultimate motivation to get it to the Supreme Court, as did Alabama. And, we are talking extremes versus the centrist positions on it. And probably we don't differ too dramatically in the central point of view.
Which is interesting because if you paint the picture of a viable baby being left to die, I still go back to think that someone would allow that to happen. What do you have to think about that person and that person's character? I mean, when you say Governor Roy Cooper would vote to allow a baby to die, what does that make you think about Roy Cooper?
It concerns me dramatically that there are people who do that. We heard the Virginia governor say it. We haven't heard Roy Cooper, but when he vetoed that bill, that Born Alive bill, it says he thinks the same way the Virginia governor thinks. And that concerns me because that's an extreme.
Lee, you're moving around a lot in your seat and lots of heavy breathing going on. What's happening?
Because there are laws that allow children that are alive to live already. And it's the same. This is an argument, the opposite side of the gun control argument, where people, there are already laws on the books. There are already laws on the books to protect children who are born alive. And by creating another bill, you create another layer of bureaucracy and fight. And I think it's rare enough. Why are we getting so emotionally involved in that to the exclusion of the practical day-to-day concerns? That's all.
Joe.
Good point. I don't think the governor of North Carolina is for killing children. I don't think any way, shape, or form. However, his base is supporting his position. And the North Carolina legislature, and I'm probably going to get hell for this, it's, you know, it was a purely political decision on the part of the North Carolina legislature to pass this act. And that happens, and that is creating the dichotomy that I mentioned before, which is keeping the debate alive and making it confrontational, because the media has picked it up and it's just perpetuating itself.
Which is what Catherine essentially said. That's an extreme, and some would argue a red herring. Some would argue that that doesn't...
That's what creates dollars in their campaign funds, and hence, you know...
And Catherine makes the point that on this deeply emotional issue, it's more likely that most of the people in this room actually agree on the skeleton of the issue. That's probably not a great choice of words. but Catherine, you've said that you think a woman should have the right to choose.
Well, I think my choice is mine, okay? And it would not be to have an abortion. But I'm not in a position, I'm too low on the totem pole to say what's right or wrong on this 50-year issue or more. 100-year issue, whatever. I think that's going to be decided somewhere else. But I am strong on this born alive and, you know, the dismemberment. There's another bill on dismemberment of infants in order to abort them, and they're viable. That concerns me.
And we need to go to a break. You're listening to Coastlines Beneath the Surface. If you'd like to weigh in with your own observation, we might discuss your point in a future show. Email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface. Listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. It's the fifth edition in a year-long experiment in civil discourse with about 12 people. They range in age, ethnicity, and political affiliation. We want to find out how the tone of their conversation changes or doesn't when this group, whose paths wouldn't likely cross otherwise, engage in sometimes difficult conversations. Today, we're spending an hour with about half of them, Lydia, Lee, Catherine, Joe, and Carl. These conversations are pre-recorded, and while we don't take live calls or emails, if you want to weigh in, you can do that at coastline@whqr.org or on WHQR's Facebook page or Instagram. We might read your comments as part of the next show. And today, we're talking about abortion rights opposition versus abortion rights advocacy. Lee, you wanted to weigh in.
I wanted to ask Catherine a question. I went through, I'm childless, my wife and I. We, not for lack of trying, and we had three pregnancies that went bad. And the term for abortion in the medical community is, of course, D&C, dilation and curette. Mm-hmm. And under the Alabama law, we would have been investigated by the state for having a D&C, even under that circumstance. Would you agree with that? Would you think that is that a viable and important thing that parents who are going through that should be investigated?
I've never heard of investigating someone for having a D&C.
That's the new law in Alabama.
No, in Alabama.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not that familiar with it, but...
And that Alabama law is the most restrictive one on the books so far, which outlaws basically...
That was thrown in to, you know, be the extreme, and that I do believe that
possibly
that has to
force
be
the issue back to the Supreme Court.
In my experience, I've never had to report anyone for having a DNC if it was medically, you know.
It was difficult for us to get in Louisiana when we lived there, running a theater in Shreveport. It was difficult for us to get. It was the hospital did not want to perform it.
It depends on the hospital.
And it was a Catholic hospital.
That's why.
And it was the best hospital in the city. Mm-hmm. But they were, eventually, but it was, there were some people using their outdoor drama voices. That would be me. Mm-hmm. At the time. I have a lot of emotion about this because I have a personal connection to it.
Mm. But there is a difference between a miscarriage for which a DNC is done and an abortion. And actually, the abortion doesn't even involve, in most cases, a DNC anymore. But there is a difference between a miscarriage with a DNC.
But you're saying that the Alabama law is too extreme.
I'm not familiar with that portion of it.
But if it's the case.
If it's the case, yes.
It would be too extreme.
Yeah, if that's what they're saying. But then again, you know, we went through this with reporting of child abuse years ago. And where, as a medical professional, I was mandated to report any suspicion of child abuse. And we went through that argument of, you know, whose right is it and what does the government have to say about whether or not I beat my child? You know, and now we wouldn't even think twice about that. But I grew up in an era where child abuse was accepted. It's my child. I have a right to beat them. And I saw children die because of child abuse in my arms. And that's why I stand for those children, just like miscarriages is heartbreaking to a couple like yourself. But an abortion isn't always that way. And I'm not saying it's not because there is emotional, but it's not always that way.
Carl, you have an experience that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I did. My wife got pregnant, and not long after having a child, she got pregnant again. And she also had other health problems. And so the doctor had given her this medication because he didn't know she was pregnant, so he gave her the medication. After he realized that she was pregnant, he said that we should have the baby aborted. And the Army made an appointment for me to go to this place and have the abortion. And we went to the clinic, and as I sat there and watched people go in and out of the door, I think what I said before, it was like people were getting their teeth cleaned. They were just coming in and out, in and out, in and out. And I realized I couldn't do it. For me personally, it was something that I couldn't do. And we went home. I have a son now, and he's a big boy, and he's fine. And all the things the doctor said never came true. It could have. I'm going to say that it probably could have come true, but it didn't. So I'm glad that I didn't have it, the abortion. But if I had, it would have been for a health reason. It wouldn't have been just as childbirth.
Think that you and your wife should have had the right to make that decision.
Yes, that should have been our decision to
make. But you're glad that you didn't, and you think that people didn't really understand or weren't experiencing the gravity of the decision that they were making.
Right.
Joe.
Well, I don't know what those people were thinking, but it didn't look like
it. Didn't look like it to you.
It didn't appear.
Joe, you talk about the emotional fallout that comes from that.
No. As a therapist, over the years, I've a number of my clients have had an issue with abortion. I think maybe about 5 or 6 women. They didn't originally come to me for this as the presenting problem, but in the therapeutic process, discussions became very real and very emotional. And one of the things I began to learn is that most women in this process do not take the decision lightly. But yet, when they made the decision, for whatever reason, even if it was because of a medical, as Carl just, possibility, years later, you know, during the process, the guilt, the emotional aspect of making that decision has come back to really create havoc in their own sense of well-being and their own self-image. And that's a difficult process to treat. And I think, you know, in a woman in making that decision goes through a very tremendous, difficult process to make that decision. And they believe they made it for the right reason. And that's the only thing that I felt could help them, is help them understand that their decision process for them at that particular time was the right decision to make for them. And therefore, they did what they felt was best for them, and help try to help them deal with the guilt in that way.
So you're leading them to a form of self-forgiveness.
Yeah, you know, and I think that goes back to what I said before, is that it's a tough decision. I cannot, you know, I have my own personal feelings and opinion on the issue, but I can't allow that to enter into a therapeutic process or how a person makes a decision. We just heard how Carl made a decision. We heard, you know, the emotional aspect of even in a really serious healthcare situation, medical situation, a decision was made. That's the piece we don't talk about. That's the piece that, you know, is not a political piece. It's not a, you know, a legislative piece.
It's not political
piece.
At all. And yeah. Is it fair to say that your position is abortion should not be readily available? If you were king of the world and didn't have to build consensus, is that where you would take it?
I still believe that, you know, the decision is an individual decision. To try to legislate morality is really a difficult situation. But I think for every action, there's a reaction. And I think that's what people don't understand. There's many different types of reactions to the decision process. And whoever makes that decision has got to accept the responsibility of that decision. And we don't see that on the surface.
Hang on one second. Lydia, I want to ask you to think about what Catherine has said so far during this discussion. And what about, and Catherine has expressed some pretty passionate points of view. What in her position and her expression of her views do you find to be positive and constructive and something that you can relate to from where you are?
I think everybody's coming to this conversation from the point of view that they love the children that they have, and that they love children in general, and that everybody wants to do the best thing for children. And from my point of view, listening to what, you know, Catherine said, she's trying to protect children, and I'm trying to protect children too. And listening to Joe too, I mean, there's women who have had abortions that have guilt, but the other side of the coin is that there's women out there who have had children that feel guilt because they don't feel like they're a good parent, or they never wanted to have children in the first place. I mean, it is a very, very difficult position. And I come to my viewpoint for feeling that women should always have the right to choose about motherhood and about what happens to their bodies, because I love my daughter more than I love anyone in the world. And I feel like every child that comes into this world should have a parent that can be an adult, provide them with the resources, attention, and love that they deserve. And if there is someone who is pregnant that does not feel like they can, you know, be healthy, not be abusing drugs and alcohol when they're pregnant, that, you know, doesn't feel like they can give their child, child abuse is a terrible thing. I feel like every child that is born should be born to a parent that wants them and that can care for them and focus on them. And that's why I come to my position.
Carl.
See, that, what she just said, is the part of this discussion that's not had. Why do we need abortions? Why is there such a thing as abortions? To me, when you start digging into that and searching that, then you start coming to some resolutions to try to resolve the problem to why a person would think they need an abortion, to understand, like in New Hanover County, let's say, there's no sex education in school, so I don't want anybody to get that part twisted. They don't have any sex education. It's illegal. So you're not teaching them about sex, but you're giving them birth control pills, telling them to go have sex, and then maybe they'll say, oh, I forgot to take my pill, or whatever. But there are problems like that that need to be discussed, that need to be talked about. Everybody talks about kids killing kids and all these things happening, but nobody's talking about what to do about these, about this problem of people just having babies, just having sex, just, and instead of educating people about the life and about the world, we go straight to attack the abortion issue without looking at what all of these things, our society has come to this point where we just, people are just having babies. A lot of times when you see people that are against abortion, sometimes I ask the question, how many of you have adopted children? Because there were kids in Chicago at one time in what we call DSS. They had kids living in there, in DSS, because their parents were just deserting them. And that DSS got taken to court because of it, because it had kids living there. But nobody loved those kids. Think about all the kids who come here and nobody loved and cared for them, but they were just dropped off on a doorstep or left somewhere. And then all the people who want to have kids, I mean, there's so much variation to this that we don't discuss, though. We go straight to attack. Oh, you shouldn't get an abortion. Oh, you should get an abortion. You, all that. But that's not the problem. The problem is over here.
Well, you also, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Catherine.
I just want to say, we also have made adoption so difficult. I mean, it's so expensive. I have family who have adopted children, several, and in different parts of my family. And it is expensive. It is difficult. They go through hell to get the child. And, you know, ultimately, I think we just make it too difficult, maybe. And there are people out there to love that child that maybe that mother doesn't want to love. There are plenty of people out there to love it. But we don't, because of our regulatory system, we don't make it very easy for these people. Look at a single parent adoptions. It's terrible. For a single parent to be able to adopt.
Lee, this is personal for you, mm-hmm. in addition to you just having a strong opinion on an issue and about which you have many. But what, as all of us sitting at this around this table do, I should say, but what about Catherine's position on this issue and what you've heard so far resonates with you?
I think part of it is what Lydia said, that Catherine clearly cares about children, is an advocate for children. And also what I heard, and I she'll have to correct me if I heard it incorrectly, was that she feels that right now, the way the law is constructed, the choice belongs to a woman. And
not totally.
You don't totally believe that?
I think that's beyond my level of decision making. No.
Then that's a discussion for another day.
Yeah.
I think the advocacy for children is the positive that I hear, and I'm glad of that.
And everyone around this table, I think, has expressed that in one way or another, which is interesting. We arrive at the end of this edition of Beneath the Surface with
it's common cause,
fundamental right of a small human as being the most important thing that people want to uphold. Carl, Catherine, Joe, Lydia, Lee, thank you all so much for being willing to go into this today.
Thank you.
Our producer is Caitlin Freund. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Ken Campbell is technical director. Beneath the Surface is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Beneath the Surface.